You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Cleveland Browns Daily continues here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Dave DiNatale and Jason Gibbs in for the vacationing Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. We continue our look here at the Browns 2016 opponents on Cleveland Browns Daily. Preseason game number 3 will be Friday, August 26th. The Browns will be headed back down to Tampa Bay for another round with the Buccaneers. And joining us now here on our hotline is Greg Allman. He is the Buccaneers and NFL beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Greg, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, Case. Hope you're doing well.
Absolutely. Well, Jason and I were talking about this. It's going to be an interesting week leading up to the game on the 26th because you're going to have a couple of new head coaches with their teams in Hugh Jackson and Dirk Koetter who are going to get to have some team-on-team scrimmages here for a couple of days leading up to the third preseason game.
Yeah, it's something that Dirk Koetter's a big proponent of. He's doing it. The Bucs did it with the Jaguars as well, the week before they're in Jacksonville. They have two joint practices there. You know, Lovie Smith was here the last 2 years. He was not a fan of the joint practices, just didn't feel like it added anything. But Koetter, I think the last time the Bucs had a joint practice, they did it with the Patriots a couple years back when Shiano was coach. But yeah, I think it's always, Koetter likes the idea of kind of seeing another look, going up against somebody who's not the same guy you've been going up against for a month of practice. And we'll find out if it helps them here, in August.
Greg, take us back to the offseason and the decision that was made to let go of Lovie Smith and promote Dirk Koetter from the offensive coordinator job to the head coaching job.
Yeah, it's something that certainly had mixed reviews from fans, from the media. I think a lot of people felt like, Lovie Smith had taken his lumps with a rookie quarterback, had improved from 2 wins to 6 wins. And that kind of constituted, a thing that they can step forward, if you will. But they were a 6-6 team and really struggled in losing the last 4 games. Were not a very good defensive team, and that was kind of supposed to be, the bread and butter of a Lovie Smith team. Mm-hmm. So they moved in another direction. Dirk Koetter, it's very rare in the NFL that you see a head coach fired and an assistant promoted in his place. I think Hugh Jackson's actually the last one to have that happen when he was in Oakland.
Right.
That's what they've done, and I think that, they like the continuity of having a familiar offensive scheme and a familiar offensive face to work with a young quarterback. I think it would have set Jameis Winston back if he was just starting from scratch, if they'd hired somebody brand new that brought in a new system, a new offense, a new quarterback's coach, and all those things.
I thought it was interesting. Dirk Koetter went back to his Falcon roots and brought in his old head coach, Mike Smith, to serve as defensive coordinator. So there'll be some familiarity there and guys that know each other, trust each other, because as you say, the defense is going to be a big priority here with Tampa Bay. Certainly with the drafting of the way the Bucs drafted, defense will be a priority.
Yeah. And Mike Smith, I thought there was a great hire for Dirk Koetter, a guy he's worked with in Jacksonville, worked with in Atlanta. Almost like another head coach on the field, if you will. Mike Smith, a guy that if they have a good year, could easily be back with another team as a head coach next fall. But they know each other well. I think they've worked well together. This coaching staff has a lot of familiarity on it. There's actually, I want to say, 5 coaches from the 2007 Jaguars, which don't seem like world beaters, but it was probably the best team the Jaguars have had since then. So there's a lot of guys that know each other, have worked well together. You mentioned the draft for the Bucs, and you're right. They did put a lot of high picks in, used their first rounder on Vernon Hargraves, who will help in the secondary, used a second rounder on Noah Spence, who they hope will be kind of the pass rusher they've really lacked, really for almost a decade. They haven't had a 10-sack season by any player since 2005, and he's definitely a pure pass rusher and somebody that, if not right away, will eventually be a good pass rusher for him.
We're joined by Greg Allman here in our Cleveland Browns Daily opponent preview as the Browns will be headed to Tampa Bay for preseason game number 3 on Friday, August 26th. I thought the drafting in Noah Spence was almost a steal. A lot of people thought he would be a late first-round pick to get him in the second round. I thought worked out pretty well for the Bucs. He obviously is a guy that comes with baggage. Ohio State fans certainly remember, here in Ohio certainly remember the circumstances that led to Spence leaving the team and moving over to Eastern Kentucky, but there's no questioning his talent and his ability.
Yeah, he's a guy that, if you go back early in the draft process, January, February, we wrote about as a possibility for them at number nine with their first round pick. You know, and I think, you know, sometimes he can almost help you as a team a little bit when somebody slides a little bit in the draft process. He does have some off-field concerns, some question marks, if you will. But to his credit, has left a very good impression so far in coaches and teammates. I think his college coaches have really gone to bat for him as well. I think the Eastern Kentucky coach even yesterday was talking about what a good player he was for them, how much even Urban Meyer had gone to bat to say, hey, this is a guy who deserves a second chance. You should take him on there at Eastern Kentucky. So right now it looks like, you know, and we can say this until something happens, but right now he certainly looks the part and done everything to suggest that he's put his troubles behind him for now.
Greg, what was your first thought when Tampa Bay trades back up into the second round and takes a kicker?
I guess surprised, like most people. You know, we had actually, you know, because he's an FSU guy, we had written a fair amount about Aguayo in the draft process. How high could he go? And I had kind of had it in my head that he would be a third-round pick, if you will. You know, so the Bucs had uncertainty at kicker last year. They went through two kickers. They had a fairly reliable guy back in Connor Barth. The way I went into it before the draft was that I thought he'd be a third or fourth rounder, but I really felt like the Bucs had greater, more pressing needs than upgrading at kicker. So they've taken a lot of flack, mainly because they traded up. They gave a fourth rounder to trade up into the second round to get a kicker. And obviously don't go that high in the draft very often. But they're very steadfast in how strongly they believe in him as being a guy that could really be a difference maker on this team for a long time if things go right.
I thought it was interesting. I thought, well, maybe if Aguayo's there on day, you know, late day two or day three, maybe the Browns could snatch him up. I didn't have a problem with the pick. Maybe in the second round it seemed high, but I mean, the Raiders took Janikowski in the first round. So, I mean, what do we all know here? But, Greg, it's interesting. I want to talk about Hargraves real quick, and then I want to get to Jameis Winston. But, Hargraves is a guy that, obviously, another Florida guy, like we mentioned, Aguayo, Florida State. So a local guy, a guy that has, you know, if he's like some other Florida cornerbacks like Joe Hayden here in Cleveland, if he's got that pedigree going for him, I think Tampa Bay would be very happy with that.
I'm sure they would welcome any comparisons to Joe Hayden. Hargraves is even the Tampa guy. He went to high school here in Tampa. So very, very much a local guy, a guy that people down here have known for a long time. You know, there's some concern for about his size. The Bucs actually have three corners they're really going to be leaning on that are 5'10". They signed Brent Grimes, who's another shorter guy. They got Altron Werner here as well. So they're kind of the poster child for trusting and counting on shorter corners, even when you're facing big receivers like Kelvin Benjamin and Julio Jones and some of the other guys they'll face in their division. But Hargraves has certainly picked things up quickly. I think that he's a guy that could play inside in the slot and outside, probably a little bit of both. Maybe be an outside corner, and then when they go to nickel, he could shift inside as well. But they like him. I mean, they really didn't have strong play from their secondary last year. Didn't get, I think, maybe 11 total interceptions all season. He's certainly been a ball hawk in college. And I think they're excited about him being, you know, something that will change their secondary this year and definitely down the road.
Greg Allman, he's the Bucs and NFL beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Jameis Winston will start his second season here as the signal caller for the Bucs, and as you mentioned, a lot of familiarity with Dirk Cutter. The continuity continues. As you watched him from game one to game 16, how impressed were you with the way Winston developed in his rookie year?
I would say very impressed. I mean, I think I thought he would be a playmaker for them. I don't know that I expected him to emerge as a leader as quickly as he did. It's hard to be 21 years old and command authority in an NFL huddle. And I think he really did a good job of that in terms of making this his team maybe a little quicker than people expected. Made some mistakes, as a lot of people thought he would. You know, he had a lot of turnovers his last year at FSU. Had 15 interceptions, had some fumbles. But really, for the most part, you know, was able to really cut those mistakes in the second half of the season. Dealt with a lot of quality players around him being injured and in and out of the lineup, and still threw for 4,000 yards. Had 28 total touchdowns. So I think part of him getting better in year two will just be the continuity of being in the same offense. And for the Bucs, hopefully having a healthier cast around him as well.
Speaking of that healthier cast, which Doug Martin do you think we'll see this year?
That's a very good question. You know, he played so well last year. You get that contract year motivation. It can make a lot of guys play well. If they can get 16-game Doug Martin and healthy Doug Martin, number two rusher in the NFL, Doug Martin, that would help Jameson Smith a lot as well. But, you know, the previous 2 years, missed about half a year with injury. So they need him to be healthy. They do have a good backup in a guy named Charles Sims if they needed to. But I think, you know, one of the reasons that Jameis did well as a rookie is that they didn't necessarily put a lot on his shoulders. You know, he was able to hand it off and have two strong running backs to lean on, so he didn't feel like he had to make so many plays himself. I think sometimes if a young quarterback like Winston feels like they have to win a game and put a team on their back, that's when you're going to get four interceptions in the game and then some of the mistakes they're hoping he can avoid.
You know, we know when we take a look at Tampa Bay's roster, they've got some very good wide receivers. They've got Doug Martin. They've got Jameis Winston. A guy I think that flies under the radar a little bit, your tight end, Cameron Brait. What has he shown you guys? I know he had a good – from what I've read and what I've seen, he had a pretty good off-season workout.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Brait's a really neat story. I mean, undrafted kid out of Harvard, missed the cut his rookie year, kind of stayed on as a practice squad player. Benefited from Austin Seferian-Jenkins getting hurt, got to play a little bit as a rookie, and then really blossomed last year. Again, Seferian-Jenkins got hurt, and I think he had 21, 22 catches. Really, showed some flash. I think had four touchdowns. You know, just as a mismatch guy, you can line up kind of as a traditional tight end, almost as a receiver, because he's got some athleticism to him. And a smart kid. Again, he's a Harvard grad. You don't have to worry about much that way. I think having both of them, if this offense has Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson healthy at receiver, and then Brait and Austin Seferian-Jenkins healthy, that's four really big targets for Jameis Winston to look downfield to. They do line up a lot with two receivers and two tight ends. It definitely gives him, options that very few quarterbacks have in terms of big targets that create mismatches downfield.
You know, Greg, Tampa Bay is trying to come out of this NFC South and get to the point where they can rise up and be a playoff contender at some point. As you look at the rest of that division, you've obviously got Carolina, the defending conference champions. But what about Atlanta and New Orleans? Is there the feeling that they're ripe to maybe for the Bucs to move past here at some point as they continue to develop and, have another good draft class like they have this year?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I think it's still Carolina's division, as you mentioned. I don't think they'll be a 15-win team by any means. But they'll probably still be the team to beat, a team that, wins double-digit games for sure. The Bucs swept Atlanta last year. So that's a team they're probably ahead of in most people's mm-hmm. minds. They open the season in Atlanta, so that's a big game to kind of start the season one way or another. They win that game, it'll certainly kind of reinforce the idea that they're ahead of them in the pecking order for the
right.
division, if you will. Where if you lose that, maybe things have changed a little bit. Maybe Matt Ryan plays a little better. Maybe that's, a team that's in a better position to challenge for a wild card than they were a year ago.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm jealous. You've got afternoon baseball going on around you, and that's always a good...
Literally.
That's
sorry
all,
about that.
No, it's all good. Are you with the Rays today or minor?
Yeah, I'm actually covering Rays Angels here. You get the occasional lineup in the background announcement.
It's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. Gibbs and I are here, and like, man, some afternoon baseball. We had an Indians game here yesterday, but we're jealous. But we appreciate you making time, Greg, and certainly look forward to seeing you when the Browns go down to Tampa Bay on the 26th.
Hey, thanks again for having me, guys. Have a good day.
You got it. That's Greg Allman from the Tampa Bay Times, the Bucs and NFL beat writer. Not a bad gig, while in the offseason, cover a little baseball.
Yeah, hit up a little baseball, write about that. And, one of the biggest takeaways – I'm listening to him. I brought up the question about the tight end.
Yes.
Browns fans probably don't care. 90% of the audience probably doesn't care, except for one thing. That guy is the exact same player that Seth the Valve is.
Right.
Go back and look. They're
similar,
very, very
similar
comparable.
Background. Yeah.
Harvard.
Yep.
I mean, it is when I was going through stuff, I said, people aren't going to understand it, but go back and listen to the podcast and listen to that. And Seth the Valve is basically the same guy, except the Browns drafted him.
Yeah,
that's exactly how Tampa Bay is using him, I think, is how the Browns want to use the Valve.
Yeah. Cameron Brait, he had three touchdowns last year And this is – he's starting his third year in the NFL. He's a good run blocker too.
Yep.
I DeValve is – you know, I'm very curious to watch – you know, what he looks like when you put the pads on in training camp.
There are so many rookies, Dino. It's going to be fun to watch these guys because my expectations right now are low simply because it's year one of this process.
Sure.
And I think, yes, the coaching staff wants to win now, and that's fantastic, and I would love for nothing more to happen than for them to go 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, 10-6 or better, whatever. I would love it. I'd be ecstatic. You know, history tells you otherwise when you're going through a total rebuild process. And there's just so many guys that you're excited to see who of all these rookies are going to pan out. And you know, there's a lot of bodies, a lot of new faces. Or is it going to be an undrafted rookie?
Right.
Someone we don't even know about. Or Scooby. Is Scooby going to come out of nowhere? It's just every day there's going to be something new to watch at training camp if you're coming out.
Yeah, the countdown is on. I can't wait. I think it's going to be an intriguing
camp.
It'll be a lot of fun,
yep. Man. I mean, to see these kids develop and to see who becomes that next group of guys that's going to lead this football team.
You just heard, you know, Greg Allman mention it. Hey, look, Tampa Bay in 2014 – won two games, and then last year they won six. Now, does that all of a sudden equal the Browns going from 3-13 to 7-9 again? No, nothing's guaranteed. But you think you like that the blending of these young players that the Browns are going to bring in with a new head coach, and you feel like, boy, you know, if you can have a similar type of season where you take that first step, you know. I mean, if I'm in Tampa Bay right now, I'm thinking, man, if I could get eight wins, if I could go from six wins to eight wins, and I know they've got a new coach, but you've got Jameis Winston, you've got a lot of weapons around him, why not?
And I would say this, you went two wins to six wins, but more importantly, and Gerard and I talked about this yesterday, and this is what I would like to see from this football team, the Browns, this year, I want you to be playing your best football in December.
Yes.
I want to see that the best football you're playing, if you take your lumps early on, so be it. But mid-November, let's start seeing exactly these guys coming into their own here.
And that's why Lovie Smith doesn't have a job anymore and Dirk Koetter is in down in Tampa Bay. Great point. All right, break time for us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We've got a lot more to come. Fact or Fiction's on the horizon, plus your calls. 216-578-0850 on Twitter, @Browns_daily, @DinoCleveland, @BGSUGibbs. Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Greg Allman. We'll have the entire show will be available for you later on at clevelandbrowns.com. But Greg Allman, Bucks and NFL beat writer, give a good perspective on Tampa Bay. And again, you might say, guys, it's a preseason game. That's a big preseason game on two fronts. Number
Real
one, it's the third preseason game. The starters will see the most time as you know in the course of that game than you'll see them in the entire preseason. Plus the fact the Browns are going to spend time scrimmaging and working out with the Bucks that week. How about them? How about Greg telling us that the week before they're going to spend 2 days with the Jaguars?
I was shocked to hear that. I mean, it's rare that one team, you know, that you go up, that you scrimmage one team, much less two teams.
Right.
That's a lot of.
It's a lot of contact, man.
Well, and trying to get, unless you're confident, I guess that works. Because Koetter's not really a new coach because he was your offensive
coach.
He's
your offensive coordinator. He knows the personnel. The offense is installed. And he trusts his mentor, Mike Smith, you know, to go handle the defense.
I mean, I guess that works. I just think that's a lot of scrimmaging and
not a lot of time for individualized.
Yeah, working on your own stuff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as we saw last year in Buffalo, when we were up in Rochester, and again, this might have been the start of the end if you looked at the, if you looked at the Pettine regime, there just wasn't – like that second day of work was horrible. Like it was 45 minutes because one guy had gone down for Buffalo the day before, so everybody freaked out. And no one wanted to go hard.
But did Justin Gilbert get hurt up there last year or something like that?
Yeah, his pride. Well, maybe he left his jock up there. I don't know.
I just remember you texted me.
It wasn't a good day. It wasn't a good 2 days.
Yeah, I remember you text. I'm like, well, how's it really look? And you're like, this isn't good.
No. You knew right away that this team wasn't ready to play and wasn't ready for the season. But I think that will change this year with Hugh Jackson and his staff. And that's why I'm willing to, like, guys like Justin Gilbert. I'm excited to kind of see where he's at. Mm-hmm. Is the fire underneath him? Because if the fire's not underneath him with what I've seen from this coaching staff, then this guy's right. never going to play in
right.
this league.
Right. If Ray Horton, you know, obviously Hugh Jackson, but if Ray Horton can't get through, there ain't anybody that's going to get through to Justin. Yeah.
I've seen this coaching staff do more in the offseason than I've seen any coaching staff do with this football team in the last 6-7 years.
And so you're in the span of 5 months or 6 months.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
the hands-on approach that these guys take, the coaching that these players are getting, it's impressive. It really, really is. And I think it's a lot to scrimmage and practice against a team. And normally, I mean, that Bills game last year, that was week 2. Of the preseason? That wasn't the end-all, be-all
game. No, that wasn't the end-all, be-all game.
You know, that's a lot of work going into that pivotal third game.
Isn't it? And tomorrow, we've got, Dan Dickerson on tomorrow?
Jeff Dickerson,
I'm sorry. From ESPN Chicago.
Yep.
And I'm curious. We'll talk about the Bears. We'll talk about some other things. But, you know, it always seems like the Browns and Bears are playing each other in that fourth preseason.
It's the most god-awful worst game.
Yes. Yeah. Although, it might be Cody Kessler's exhibition game.
This is true. This is very, very true. And some of those wide receivers that maybe aren't in the first or second team are going to get a lot of reps.
Yeah.
So, you're right. It could actually be a
That could be somewhat meaningful. You know, I'm
happy we're at home for that.
Yes, I would agree.
There's nothing worse than going for that fourth preseason game and going to Chicago. And then, going to overtime. Deacon doing everything he can, shaking, bringing out the rosaries, whatever it takes to not go to overtime. Because knowing full well, it's going to be 2:33 in the morning before we get home from a game 4 preseason.
From a game 4 preseason. It starts at 8 o'clock at night.
Yes.
Goes until 11:30. Then by the time you guys clear out, you're not out of there until 1.
Yep.
Oh.
You're out an hour after the game ends.
Oh, my goodness.
It is brutal. That fourth game is just – and you're dreading it right from the morning from the morning you wake up.
Yes.
Because you see the night before, the players that aren't going to be playing in the game get to go out, essentially.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
On Thursday night. They get to relax and have some. Now, that might change now with Hugh's system, but the last two coaches, players were allowed to go out and go shopping. And, I mean, they still had to be back, and they still had to do certain things, but there was a lot more freedom and flexibility. Guys were making dinner reservations, and you were like,
well, there are some good restaurants in Chicago.
There are some good restaurants. Dave Spano will also tell you there's some fantastic karaoke bars.
He would know.
That there was not enough alcohol for me to drink to sit through a whole karaoke night.
Oh, and really, truly, last thought on Deke. Is there anything better than Doug Deacon trying to pronounce, because every year, there's always a rookie who may have a Samoan last name or a tough to pronounce last name, and Donovan will set him up and Doug.
More vowels than consonants.
Right.
Or something along those lines.
Yes. I don't think there's anything more enjoyable than that because you probably never
and
see him again.
And if he's listening right now, he's like, I hate you, Gibb.
Yeah.
Because we have a fantastic laugh at his expense every year. And it's all out of love because we know before the game starts, he looks at us and he goes, if this guy plays a lot, we're going to have problems tonight. If this guy plays a lot, we're really going to have problems tonight.
That's a tradition unlike any other.
It is.
All right, break time for us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. On the flip side, looking forward to this. Jason Gibbs has worked very hard to come up with today's fact or fiction questions. We will discuss that and play fact or fiction next here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dino and Gibbs back here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We're in for Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. 216-578-0850 is our number. You can tweet the show at Browns underscore daily. Also at Dino Cleveland and at BGSU Gibbs. Rob says, guys, the coaching staff is the thing I'm most excited about with the Browns. By far the best staff we've had in a long time.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. You know, now it's let's get the pads on and let them do their thing. But I'm excited, too. I really am. I'm excited to see what Hugh Jackson called the plays. I'm excited to see what this defense will do with Ray Horton. Now with some guys that can rush the passer that have been brought in. Wide receivers. I mean, it goes on. There are so many things to be excited about.
There are. But as you said, now we got to see it in pads.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen good – you know, we've seen some good things. We've heard some good things. And there's a lot of players here. Let's see who we have. Let's see how good this team is.
Absolutely. Let's see how good Jason Gibbs is coming up with fact or fiction questions as we play.
We ask the questions.
You make the predictions.
It's time to play fact or fiction. Fact or fiction.
That's ultimately what you were trying to get to.
That's what I was trying to get to.
I just didn't let you get there.
That's all good.
Number one today. Every one of the Browns 2016 draft picks will make the final 53-man roster on opening day.
Don't quite think so. I'm going to say fiction. Because what are you talking about? 11 guys or 12 guys? How many did we end up with?
I think 14.
Was it 14? I mean, it was a ton.
Yeah.
I don't quite think. You know, it won't be anything. I don't think you're going to see a fourth round pick like, you know, Vince Maley in 2014.
We're not going to see a Vince Maley.
You know, 2015 not make the team. It won't be anything like that. But, you know, things happen. Injuries happen. 14 guys is a lot to incorporate on a 53-man roster. You know, you'll see a number of them go to the practice squad, but I'll say fiction.
I would say fiction as well. Yeah. I mean, I think you could have a couple guys that end up on that practice squad. I think there's only so many wide receiver spots. And how many wide receivers you keeping? And if you're keeping all the rookies, does that mean there's a veteran or two that is going to get cut?
Right. I'm going back and looking at the Browns draft. I mean, I had forgotten. It tells you how embedded I've been thinking about the Cavs here, you know, that the Browns had that many draft picks. Yeah, I agree with you. It's, you know, Coleman obviously will be a star. I think Coleman will be a starter at that wide receiver spot. Higgins, I mean, yeah. But I think when you start getting into that sixth and seventh round, and by the way, I do think Scooby Wright's going to make the team. I think Scooby Wright is going to be a critical special teams player. And
big fan of Scoob.
I'm a big fan too. So, but no, to answer your question, I think it'll be fiction.
Fact or fiction?
Number two today, Cam Newton is the number one player in the NFL, at least according to NFL's top 100 players released last night.
He was number one, huh?
He was number one.
I think I saw Antonio Brown was number four.
I thought that was a good number for him.
I did too.
Do
you have it in front of you?
I'm bringing it up right now.
I'm curious. I know Tom Brady, I think, was up there. J.J. Watt, I believe, was up there. And I think Aaron Rodgers. I think that might have been the top, you know, five of the top ten, maybe.
So Cam Newton was number one. Let's see what else we got here.
Yeah, I'm going to say, by the way, just off the top of my head, fiction. I have a lot of respect for Cam's game. I think this experience of what happened in the Super Bowl will help him, and I think he is going to get better. But I'm not ready to say right now he should be the number one player in the NFL.
I couldn't agree more. Number two was Tom Brady,
okay,
who I think should be ranked ahead of him.
Yes.
Number three was J.J. Watt. He should be ahead,
yes,
of him. Antonio Brown was four, right where I thought he probably
would. Yeah, I don't have a problem. Top receiver in the NFL, yeah, especially with Calvin Johnson gone. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Adrian Peterson is five. Aaron Rodgers is six. Mm-hmm. I would have flip-flopped those two.
Probably.
Seventh is Luke Kuechly.
Second best defensive player in the league, probably, behind Watt, yeah.
I don't know about Kuechly there. And I don't know about number eight, Julio Jones.
Well, I was thinking about that with Antonio Brown. If you had to get a receiver, and I need Nathan Zegar to tell me who had more targets and who had more catches. I love you, Nathan. I would still I love me Julio Jones, but I might actually take Antonio Brown over Julio.
I would. There's no question. What he brings to your team as a all around.
Yeah, because of the all around aspect.
Yeah, I think Antonio Brown is a total MVP candidate.
Yeah.
Number nine was Rob Gronkowski. I had Gronk in my top five yesterday when we went through this. Because the things he's done
when he's healthy,
with all respect to Julian Edelman is a product of their system.
Oh, yeah, yes, correct.
Gronk so is the only weapon.
So
that
is
they
Danny.
Have.
So is Danny Amendola.
Yeah, Gronk's really the weapon.
Yes, Gronk makes everything a lot easier for the Patriot, yeah, receivers.
And Odell Beckham Jr. was 10. I thought that Von Miller should probably been in the top 10.
Yeah, that's.
And
that's a good call.
I thought Khalil Mack should have been in the top 10.
Not quite there yet. Not quite there yet. I don't have Cam number one. I mean, I'd have him in the top five. But, yeah, I might have. It's amazing. Tom Brady's in his late 30s, but I probably would have Brady number one, Watt two.
Yep.
I
think I might have had Watt one yesterday.
Yeah, Brady I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with that. Brady one, Watt two.
I put Cam three.
Yeah. Okay. So
I put Antonio Brown four. And I put Gronk five.
And I'd have Aaron Rodgers five. Yeah. No problem with that.
All right.
Next.
Fact or fiction?
Outside of Ohio State and Michigan, the next best rivalry in college football is Michigan Notre Dame, which will be coming back. It was announced today in 2018.
Oh, boy. I love that game. But I'm going to say fiction. Outside of Ohio State and Michigan, I got to go with the Iron Bowl, Auburn, Alabama. I think that they've made documentaries about that game, and there have been so many weird things that have happened in the Iron Bowl with Auburn and Alabama. So that's number two. But I think when you talk about like the best non-conference rivalry in college football, oh yeah, I mean Michigan Notre Dame, even more so than USC Notre Dame. I'll take Michigan Notre Dame.
I would, yeah. I mean, Michigan-Ohio State's the real deal, but then the SEC's got to have a game in,
yeah,
there that's a rivalry. Or excuse me, you could even say like USC-Notre Dame. You know, that Notre Dame fans will tell you that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly, by the way, tweeting out, we wanted to make this game happen. Since it's the season opener at Notre Dame, at Coach Jim 4UM may need to break out the khaki shorts.
Oh, get the 2 year snark in early. I like it.
Yeah, let's start it now. Neither coach might be there 2 years from now, but
exactly.
Who
both
knows?
Both could be back. Both in Harbaugh's case, back in the NFL, and Brian Kelly's case, he could be anywhere. Who knows?
But it was ridiculous that rivalry ended to begin, yeah, with. It's good for college football. It's good for the Midwest. And it helps out against that SEC bias.
I need me some Ohio State Notre Dame, too. Bring that one. Feel free to play that one more than every 50 years, by the way, because that's about where that's been at.
Fact or fiction?
All right, final one here real quick. When it comes to Cleveland sports, NFL, MLB, NBA, the Yankees are still the most hated opponent of any Cleveland team.
Oh, that's fiction. I feel like I've done all fiction on your questions. Your questions have been outstanding. But the most hated opponent of any Cleveland team, I think if we took a poll, Steelers would be one. The Steph Curry Golden State Warriors would be two.
Would you have number one?
Yeah, Steelers. I think Steelers one. I mean, Golden State, the Ravens, and then probably the Yankees. But like, it's interesting. The Indians and Yankees only play each other twice a year now, the way the schedule lines up.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't either. But, I mean, there are going to be a ton of fans at Progressive Field starting tonight. I don't know. I mean, some of them are, I know some are going to be Yankee fans. You know, basically, expatriates from New York. But I find that weird. But, no, I got to say fiction. All right. Good stuff, Gibbs. We'll do Friday forecast tomorrow. Look forward to that. All right, break time for us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We wrap it up right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping things up here on this Thursday of Cleveland Browns Daily. Dave DiNatale, Jason Gibbs with you. Back tomorrow for another edition from 1 to 3 as Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm enjoy some vacation. A couple of tweets to wrap the show from my man at @G_IGeorge behind enemy lines. He says, quotes us, on the Browns 2015 draft class for this coming year, you won't see a Vince Maley. Yes.
Yes.
Or T. West or Johnny Football or et cetera.
The list is long and distinguished.
Yes. I'll be honest with you, G.I. George, I'm very excited about that. Trucker Dave, by the way, safe travels around North Dakota, Trucker Dave. He says, I think the Browns have the best coaching staff since Marty's in the 80s. I have more optimism than I've had in over 25 years.
Sounds thoroughly dismal that you're in Bismarck.
Yes.
Yeah. That sounds about as fun as playing in traffic.
Travel safe, Trucker Dave, please. All right, that's going to do it for us. Golden Boys are coming up next with Aaron Goldhammer and Emmett Golden. I'll talk to you at 5 on the Bruce Hooley Show. Jace, great stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Sounds good, my friend. Looking forward to it.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.